Welcome to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. Get ready to embrace the fearless mindset and revolutionize your dentistry practice. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. Today, I'm really pleased to have as a guest, Dr. Lynn Tao, DMD. If you want to really investigate Lynn, which I think is really worthwhile for you, go to his LinkedIn profile, Dr. Lynn Tao, and you will glean a lot of good information about Lynn. I became acquainted with Lynn through LinkedIn. I did a little search and really discovered that Lynn and I have quite a few things in common. And so I just felt like I needed to get a hold of Lynn, and we've had an onboarding conversation, and it was a real pleasure for me to meet you, Lynn. So welcome to the podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I look forward to spending the next little bit talking to you and your audience about whatever you want to talk about. I'm an open book.
You betcha. Well, you've got a lot of great information, and you have a good background, and you have a really an interesting profile. One of the things that in reading and researching you out and kind of quote-unquote doing the stalking part is that you're dedicated to improving dentistry for both the patients and the dentist. I'm going to come back to that. That's going to be my first question with you, Lynn. But first, I want to hit some highlights. Is that, you know, you're a general manager for the dental vertical, a division of BirdEye, which is online digital marketing and reputation management program. Describe that a little bit for us, would you?
So you want to talk about BirdEye? Is that what you're asking me, or how I got involved with BirdEye? What's the direction you want to go there?
You go as deep as you want with that. I'm fascinated by the nature with which you became associated with them, because you had your own component that you then sold to BirdEye, and you made a dental division with them. And so, what the podcast is about, Lynn, is you know, the entrepreneurial spirit within people. And we in dentistry don't think that we have any options, and we limit ourselves. We're very linear in our education and therefore often in our thinking after we graduate from dental school. You've taken this a bit further for yourself. And so I'm infatuated with all the things that you've engaged yourself in. So talk about the dental vertical, the component of BirdEye, how you became involved with that, and what your purpose is with all of that.
Okay, yeah, sure. So you talk about the entrepreneurial, you know, inside of people. I want to take it a step back just a little bit. So I was always involved in entrepreneurship, even when I was a little kid. At 13 years old, I started a baseball card business. It was called L&M's Lineup. I asked my parents for a loan. They gave me the loan. I bought my dad out about 6 months later, and it became Lenny's Lineup. And I was making about $60,000 a year from the age of 13 to 17. And I knew that I had a feeling that the card business was going to kind of have a crash at some point. And it actually coincided when I was graduating from high school and going to college, which was 1991. So in 91, I sold the business and got out right at the right time. Now cards are obviously worth a boatload more, you know, especially with all the different stuff they have. But
I got to ask you a question, Lynn.
Sure.
So from the age of 13 through the end of high school, you had an income from your baseball card or from sports cards of about $60,000 a year.
Correct. Yep.
That is amazing. Okay. Now, you sold that business when you graduated from high school. You obviously had a very nice profit from selling that business.
I did. It wasn't as much as I could have gotten, but it was also timed with the fact that I was leaving New York, where I was growing up, and I was going to New Orleans to go to college, and I was focusing on that, not on the baseball card business. So had a reason to exit, obviously. And it was similar now, even though when I retired from dentistry, there was a reason behind me, and I didn't sell it for the top amount that I could have because I had a reason I wanted to sell. So, I mean, it's kind of repetitive how things have worked in my life. But yeah, that's how my entrepreneurial spirit started. It was way back when I was 13 years old. And then when I went to you know, college and dental school, I came out and I ended up working for an office in Pennsylvania and eventually bought my own practice in 2007 from, unfortunately, a dentist who had passed away. He had committed suicide. And I started learning to market the practice on my own because I didn't believe or I didn't agree with what the gurus were telling me. And I had a feeling that the internet was the way to go. And in 2007, the internet was not what it was today. Very, very different.
Yeah.
And but I had a gut. I went with the gut. I learned how to market online myself, and I started doing it and becoming very successful at it. And that got me speaking around the country, locally, study clubs, all over the place regarding online marketing. I did some consulting as well at the request of some dentists I had met during my lecturing. But I didn't love the consulting model simply because I was still practicing dentistry and it took a lot of my time. So I developed a piece of software called iSocial Reviews. It was a review platform that was very, it was all manual. I had no integrations. It was very dependent on the team or the doctor to do everything by sending out the review requests. And it debuted in 2013 at the Yankee Dental meeting. And I wasn't sure if anybody would buy it. It was more of let's test the market. And I sold 9 pieces of software during the weekend. There was nothing else on the market at all. And I was like, okay, this is going to work. And I started going to other trade shows. So I started to really decrease my time in the office. I was starting to attend trade shows, selling more. And in the first year, we had 180 dentists on board. And that's when BirdEye came calling and they wanted me to jumpstart their dental side. And they offered me a position at their company, which meant acquiring my company from me. And in September 2014, I joined them and as their director of the dental division. So I've been with them just shy of 9 years now. And we've gone from probably 200 dentists, maybe 250 combined at that point, to well over 10,000 dental practices now, 10 years later. So it's been a really, neat journey. It's, you know, I don't own BirdEye. I'm not an owner. I do have stock in the company. But I'm not an owner. People think I own it because of my relationship with the company and how long I've been involved. But I feel like it's almost my baby because I was very there from the very beginning, and it's really been an enjoyable run. It really, you know, when I told my wife back in 2012 that I was going to develop a piece of software to help Dennis get online reviews, she was like, "Yeah, have fun." Little do we know, you know, 10 plus years later, you know, I exited dentistry in December, so December I retired, and I have an entirely different lifestyle now. I live in Florida. You know, I love my life I live, and, it's been good. I can't complain. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you officially retired in, this last December, but from dentistry, from the ham piece. And so life has been busy. When we spoke earlier, you mentioned, that you speak approximately 40 times per year. That's an amazing schedule. You must love traveling.
Well, I don't love traveling as much as I used to, especially, you know, during COVID, travel was really good. I got to be honest with you, because things were on time. I really didn't have any delays. Now it's become a little bit of a pain in the butt. The last couple of months, I've been very much delayed and no cancellations, but my schedule gets delayed. But I don't – travel is a piece of the puzzle that means that I have to do what I do. But it's the speaking part that I really enjoy. And I've been a educator my entire life. I always enjoy teaching people. And the stuff that I talk about, other dentists don't know. And being a dentist myself, they look at me in different ways. Rather than someone who's a marketing person talking about marketing, I'm a dentist talking about marketing, and I know it very well. So for those that speak and that are listening, that are speakers, know that there's a very interesting feeling you get when you're done. It's a really good feeling you get when you're done speaking and people are coming up to you and telling you that you really know what you're doing and they appreciate you giving them your expertise. So I love speaking. I mean, speaking, I don't say no to being a speaker, you know, and just as an example, this podcast is coming out at the end of August. My wife's birthday is August 18th. And I'm at an event speaking. Last year was our anniversary in June, and I spoke in Jamaica on the day of our anniversary, and she didn't come with me. So, But she understands that it's an important part of what I do, and it's right. When I enjoy it, I want to keep doing it. So I very rarely say no. But I love speaking. I like to travel, but I love the speaking element much more.
Share with me what you're experiencing out there now when you speak to dentists. What are some of their main obstacles that they're seeing or that you're seeing with dentistry out there and getting their message out about who they are?
So obviously I teach a number of different topics. I teach a marketing class. I teach obviously a lot of stuff on reviews and dealing with negative reviews and how to respond to reviews. I give a class on case acceptance. I have a wide range here. I don't do anything clinical at all. I've never been a clinical speaker. Even when I talked at Invisalign stuff, I didn't teach Invisalign. You know, I taught systems in place to doing more Invisalign, but I've never been a clinical speaker. Yeah. So some of the challenges are people not willing, able, or wanting to spend money. They say they can't afford to market their practice. And to me, that's a bunch of crap. They don't want to spend the money. If you spend money in to market your practice, inevitable you will make money. I mean, it's there's a ROI, a certain ROI you're going to get, and if you do it with the right people, you will make money. And I always say it's an investment, not an expense. You have to market your practice, and if you market it appropriately, you will make a lot of money. But to say you can't afford it or to think you have to think about it, and we're talking anywhere from $300 to a couple thousand dollars a month. To me, that's a problem. You have to break through those decisions. You know, there's something called paralysis by analysis. And I think a lot of times dentists are overanalyzing situations and it really stumps their growth. So that's one of the biggest things I see is people who just can't make decisions. And I've been someone who's always made decisions very, very quickly. And I teach this concept. It's called the 98% decision factor. That 98% of the decisions I make are made within seconds. They will have no influence on my life. They'll have no influence on anything that's going to be long term. Versus the 2% decisions are those that really can have a major effect on someone's life. Do I buy a practice? Do I sell my practice? Do I move to a different state? Do I, you know, buy a $100,000 car? Those are something that takes a little bit longer than something that costs between $300 and $2,000. So I like to teach that because it's definitely a concept that paralyzes a lot of practices from being at the level they could be.
I think that's interesting because I agree with your paralysis by analysis situation there. Years ago, I started marketing externally in my practice probably in the mid-90s, and I loved marketing. I loved trying to understand and studying the human psychology behind interaction and going. I tried to market from not the transactional standpoint, Lynn, but from the transformational standpoint. I always looked at what value could I bring to my patients in helping them transform their lives in whatever way that they were looking for me to help them in that process. And I found it a lot of fun, challenging the standards of marketing and quote-unquote sales. But I also realized I had a lifestyle and cosmetic dental practice, and if I was going to be successful at that, I knew that I needed to market externally, but my message needed to be appropriate in reaching these types of people. Share with me a little bit what you see as far as the different styles of marketing for different practices and what that means for the dental community out there.
Well, I think it's very much demographics. It depends where you are in the country. I truly believe that. Look, there are still people I know that use the Yellow Pages, and they're very happy with the Yellow Pages. And in certain places, the Yellow Page barely exists. So I think there are areas where TV ads are really important. I don't believe in doing TV ads. I don't like traditional marketing. I believe in going where the places where most of the people are, and that's going to be on the internet. So I think it depends on, again, very geographically located. In certain areas, AdWords work better than others. You know, paying Google to put your ad at the top of the page works much better in some locations than others. Yelp is important in certain places and not in others as well. So I think you have to really understand a couple of things. One is where you're located. Number two is who your target audience is and what you're trying to target. So if you're a general dentist wanting to do general dental things only, it's going to be very difficult to, spend money on marketing paid marketing, I mean, and attract new patients to your practice versus someone who's trying to do the high-end stuff, implants, Invisalign, cosmetics. It's a lot easier to invest money into those avenues because the ROI is going to be significantly more than trying to attract someone to come in for a filling. So I think you have to really look at your practice, evaluate what you want to market, and then do your due diligence. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, there are a lot of companies out there who just are not that good. And they get a couple people talking about them online and people start believing them. And that's how they get their clients. And you really need to do your due diligence. I would never in a million years use a company that does cold calling. I don't believe that's an effective way to, for that company to market. And there's so many dentists who get, you know, snookered into signing up with these companies where they start off with, hey, our services are $5,000 for the year. And by the end of the call, it's $200 a month. So, you know, there should be some really, really key indicators to you about whether you should be using a company or not. So do your due diligence before you sign up with companies. There are many Facebook groups out there. Go into them, join them if you're a dentist especially, and then really analyze and search for what companies are actually offering and whether there truly is a vast majority of them who believe that they're actually doing a good job. Because there are a number of companies out there you do not want to get involved with.
That's very true. You can see them on the internet when you mark, when you, you search for a digital marketing platform. And I've seen them and you know, you make one little inquiry and boy, they just hound you to death. And when someone approaches you like that, that's a key indicator for me to walk away, get away from that type of thing really, really quick. You have a podcast, Raving Patients. Talk about that a little bit, Lynn.
So I've always been an educator. Like I said, I've always liked creating content for dentists out there. And one of the best ways I felt I can do it was to create a podcast. Originally, it was designed as a podcast to talk about online reviews. And that's why it was called the Raving Patients Podcast. But that's the brand that I'm behind. You know, I have a book called Raving Patients. I believe we need raving patients to do all these things in our practice to make it successful. So Raving Patients has always been my brand. So we just branded it the Raving Patients Podcast. But we're now in season six. We're almost starting season seven, obviously, in another 5 months. We've done over 300 episodes. Every week it comes out Friday at 5 a.m. And it's, I'm always interviewing a guest and we're always talking about how to grow someone's practice. So it's very much become a really big part of my life. I don't look at myself as anything special in dentistry. I'm just a hard worker who I think threw darts at things and it worked really well. And, you know, I really enjoy doing it, but people tell me they listen to it. They message me after an episode, say they really learned a lot. And that's really what it's there for. It's a way for me to continue the putting out content and educating colleagues who may not know any better and hoping they get a couple of, you know, pearls from each episode. And that's helps how they grow their practice. So that's the reason behind it. I've tried to avoid having some duplicate guests. So I think in all, maybe five guests of the 300 plus episodes I've done have been duplicates. But everybody is a unique person who comes on the podcast and tells their story, just like I'm doing here for you.
Yeah. I listened to a couple of episodes early on when we met each other, and now I'm a consistent listener. I enjoy the podcast, Lynn, and I enjoy the information there. You had a couple of guests on there that I thought were very interesting. Steve Anderson, I've known of Steve for years, and he talked about the fee-for-service practice and breaking away out of the claws of the PPO programs. And then also Michael Anderson, you had a great interview with him. I really enjoyed both those gentlemen. But Steve Anderson, you know, was talking about the fee-for-service. And I know that your practice was a fee-for-service, as was mine. And that fee-for-service scares people. They don't think it can happen. When I talk to dentists, I ask them, you know, the audience, how many of you are fee-for-service? And very few hands go up. And how many of you would like to be fee-for-service? A lot of hands go up. And so there's a real gap between those two. What do you see, Lynn, as the biggest obstacle for dentists going into fee-for-service? Because, you know, the benefits of it are so enormous, so enormous.
So I think one of the biggest factors that prevents someone from wanting to go fee-for-service is they feel they're going to lose patients. And they will. they will lose patients. But the reimbursement they're getting is going to be so much greater that it should really overcompensate them. And the example I give is if you drop an insurance, don't even go full fee for service. That's the first thing they need to do. Obviously, if they're in insurance, they have to start dropping insurances. So pick the worst insurance plan that you have. Okay. You may lose 20% of your patients if they have a lot of patients in your office using it, but you'll overcome that by making much more than 20% more on the procedures you're doing. So, you're going to actually be less busy, which is good. You'll have more time to see other patients and you'll make the same, if not more money. So, I think that's the first thing to understand how that works. But they are definitely concerned with losing patients. And that's what I hear consistently is they think they're going to lose a significant portion of their patient base. But the way I tell them to do it is, look, I'd rather them invest the money in marketing that they're actually taking off their write-offs. So if you're taking an insurance company, let's say it's $100,000 that, you know, let's say use an easy number here, and they're taking a 30% hit. That means $30,000, okay, of that could be invested into marketing instead. And if you invest $30,000 in marketing, you're going to make a lot more than $100,000. I can tell you that. So I think it's the mindset that you have to have people understand that, you know, there are some negatives to doing it in the beginning, but the far reach is so much greater. If you make that commitment. Now I got lucky because I bought a practice that was fee for service already. I did make a mistake though. And I mean, I've made many mistakes, but this one really hurt. When I brought in an associate in 2017, she wanted to go in network. Now I was out of network. She wanted to go in network, and I really mucked the practice up because the girls in the office couldn't comprehend that if we take someone out of my schedule and put it into the in network dentist schedule, it really affects the bottom line. And, yes. It just became very confusing. So when she left in 2020 during COVID in June, she had decided to go back to Austin. And I brought in a new associate who now owns the practice. She said, I'm not going in network at all. So we became back out of network again, fee for service. And the numbers went tremendously up because we didn't have to deal with the write-offs that we were taking.
Yeah. The benefits are, as I mentioned, just enormous. You just have more fun in the practice. You're able to build the relationships with your patients upon true concepts of, you know, honesty, depth, meaning, fulfillment, that type of thing. The practice is so less stressful. Steve Anderson, the one thing that he mentioned, and you just mentioned it a minute ago, you know, the big fear of losing all of the patients. You know, they overthink and make this problem greater than what it is. And I was surprised when Steve Anderson did say it through their studies, and they study this a lot, is that the average office or practice will lose 20% of their patient base at the most. My guess would have been greater than that. And I know that the dentists out there, when they're thinking about, or even maybe not even, they're just looking at the concept and the idea of the thing that scares them is that they're looking at and saying, gosh, I'm going to lose 80% of my patient base and keep 20%. But it was interesting for me to hear Steve say, usually 20% max is what they see in the loss of the patient base. That's not bad. That's a pretty good number. And as you mentioned, the write-off is enormous, and you save that money and it goes into your pocket. You can grow your practice. You can put it into great equipment, great staff, and great marketing, which brings in the type of patients that you want.
Yep.
I equate marketing to, I'm a fly fisherman, and you know, if you ever stand on the water fly fishing, you know that in the morning you use a certain fly that the bugs hatch and the trout will take. By late morning, there's a different fly that you have to do because different bugs are hatching. You constantly have to change your bait to bring in the type of a patient that you really want into your practice. And unless you know and understand and you ask and figure this out, you're wasting your money and your time in marketing.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
One of the things that I picked up on, and I like these two phrases, listening to the voice of the patient. Talk about that as far as reputation and practice building.
So there's a couple ways to look at it. One is you listening to the patient in the office. And, you know, unfortunately, I was not always a good listener. I had worked with some consultants in the very beginning when I first bought the practice to become a better boss, to become a better leader, to become a better dentist, et cetera. And she, in fact, pointed out to me that I was not listening to what the patients were saying. Okay. I was constantly distracted. I was over talking, you know, talking over them. And she said, Len, if you are going to be a better person and a better dentist, a leader, you need to learn to listen better. And so I invested time and I took, I did something called active listening and I became an active listener and it shows the people that you're listening to them. And thus I became better in a lot of things I do because I listen intently. My memory is extraordinary. So I remember so much about, when I meet people. So I think on that aspect is one aspect of it. But the other aspect is in terms of reputation is that patients are listening to what other patients are saying. And they're saying, they're not speaking it, they're writing it. And if you are consistently getting negative reviews regarding a specific instance in your office, whether it's a person at the front desk that's not doing a good job, their tone is not good, they're short, or you know, you're running late, people are going to read these. And if you don't learn from these reviews, you're not doing a service to your business. So I think there's two ways to look at what you just said. One is listening to your patients and one is listening to what they're saying. And patients are listening to what they're saying as well. And it can either, in my opinion, hurt or grow your practice.
One of the things that I learned early on, well, actually, when I took my practice from a general practice in the mid-90s to a lifestyle practice, Len, is that one day I walked in and I told my staff, we are no longer a general dental practice as of this point. We are a cosmetic dental practice. And cosmetic lifestyle, basically. And before I walked in on that Monday morning, Thursday, when I left the office, I closed the door and said, John, your practice is now a different practice. And so I thought about this all weekend, wondering what Monday morning was going to look like. What was I going to be feeling Monday? How was I going to communicate this to the staff? Because I did not tell them that I was doing this. How was I going to get them on board? And were people going to, what were they going to think about us? What was going to be their interpretation of my message? And I was surprised that Monday when I walked in and I announced to the staff, they were very much on board with it, which I was very pleased with. But the thing that happened that day, which I'll never, ever forget, was I started looking at my patients different. And it was all a mindset. I started looking at patients and I started asking different questions. At the end of the day, I realized that, John, you've got to learn to communicate different because the whole day just felt very, very different. But it was a lot of fun. And the one thing was, as I mentioned, communication. And the big part of communication, as you mentioned earlier, Len, with you, was learning to listen. And I started understanding the value of listening to people's story. And when I started doing that, the transition from my general practice into a cosmetic practice, it just blossomed. And I was amazed by it because I felt like I had the technical skills, but I couldn't communicate and relate to the patients what I was trying to do. But it became very special when I learned to listen and not think of my next question in a linear form. So listening to the patient's voice became critically important for me. And it was a blessing because I got to know my patients at such a deeper level. And it was so fulfilling. You're shaking your head, yes, so I know you know what I'm talking about. Share with me the experience that you had in your practice with your staff and how day in and day out you felt about going to the office.
So, you know, my team started, but just so you know, my team the team stayed when I bought the practice. And then over time, they started to obviously leave. After a couple of years, I had to fire somebody for some issues. And I brought my own people in. It took a lot to get them to fully buy into the way I was doing things. I was not the previous dentist. But I will tell you, they appreciated the fact that I took the time. The patients appreciated the fact that I took the time to really spend time listening to what they're saying and having a conversation and understanding their needs and their desires and their wants and what they were looking for. And when you listen better, I think that they appreciate it and thus will give back more in return. So it became a very big growth of my practice when I became a better listener. I can tell you that my practice in the 2008, 9, 10 to 12 years, my practice was huge. I was doing $2.5 million a year, working 3.5 days a week, with in a fee for service practice, with the overhead about 55 to 60%. So I was doing really well. And obviously it was those years that I was not focused on marketing, you know, teaching marketing and consulting and Bird Eye and all those other things. So those were my years I really grew my practice, but I was too young to sell then, by the way. So I had offers from DSOs back then, but I was over 10 years ago. So I just turned 50. I would have been 40 years old, and it didn't make sense for me to exit that soon. But as I started to take away time from the practice, obviously my numbers kind of dropped. Then we brought insurance and the numbers dropped again. But I can tell you that the team and the patients both appreciate the fact that if you spend the time to learn how to listen better and show them that you're listening to them, obviously through active listening, it goes a long way on both aspects of things.
It does. Before I went in for a new guest, new patient consultation, before I entered the room, I'd stop outside and just kind of gather myself and get myself into a good mindset and just kind of tell myself that there's a great story inside this room just waiting for me to listen to it, waiting for me to understand it, and waiting for me to appreciate them as an individual. And then I would walk in, and I just kind of let the magic of the moment occur. It wasn't anything magical about me. I just asked questions and listened. And I could tell within minutes that there was a connection starting. And once that connection started, you just kind of let it go, and you roll with it. And you could tell at a certain point in time with the patient's posture, the facial expressions and whatever, that they knew that this was the place where they needed to be to have their dentistry done. And it was a fun thing to watch that and experience that. I looked forward to every new patient every day. It was just an exciting thing. But then what became the challenge of that, Lynn, was the existing patient base. Not ignoring them and knowing that each one of them had a story. And I had not necessarily at that point keyed into I had not keyed into those people like I had or I was doing with my present new patients. And so I had a whole library of people waiting for me to ask those significant questions and listen to them. And guess what? Started doing more dentistry on the existing patient base also. And the thing about this is all free. This is all free stuff. It's just learning how to listen, ask great questions, and then give the people great feedback on what you're hearing. It was a great experience. And, you know, what we're talking about is what I try to encourage our listeners that come to the Fearless Dentistry podcast is to let your imagination and your creativity go and see where you can take it in developing your practice into the ideal practice that you want. Don't be afraid. Kick that fear factor out. You know, you mentioned making 98% of your decisions within the first 2 seconds of thinking about it. And I'm kind of like that. I do that also. Then I'll go figure it out. And that's the fun part of it, is figuring it out. Couple things here that I want to hit on pretty closely here. You have a live event, September 29th and 30th. Tell us about that, Lynn.
So it's called Supercharger Dental Practice. It's in Delray Beach, Florida at the Opal Grand Resort. It is a 2-day business and marketing boot camp. First day is dedicated to the marketing side of one's practice. The second day is on the business side of one's practice. There's 17 speakers, 14 hours of continuing education. Right now, we, as of literally a couple of minutes ago, we are at 189 registrants for it. So it has far exceeded my expectations in number of people that want to come to it. We were probably, you know, with another 6 weeks to go as we're recording this, we should be, you know, well over 200 plus attendees. So it's some of the best speakers there that I know in the industry. And obviously being a speaker, I know that a lot of them are going to be there to really, everybody has got 45 minutes to, so they're more of a shorter segments, not longer segments. A lot of great entertainment. We have a magician / illusionist coming Friday night to entertain us. There's a Thursday evening registration event at a place called the Silver Ball Museum, which is a classic arcade, pinball, skee ball, all there's no cost involved. So there's a lot of entertainment. Then there's also a ton of education. So I'm looking forward to having my first event. And then we already have our second one booked in Scottsdale in 2024, September 27th and 28th, where it's going to be focused on marketing, but also mental wellness and a couple other things. So it's called Supercharge Your Dental Practice, and it's September 29th and 30th of this year.
Okay. In 2024, that's located where again, Lynn?
It's in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay. Well, I'm registered to come to Delray Beach in September. I'm very anxious to come down there and be a part of that, get to meet some of the people. I've had Joshua Scott. He's going to be speaking there. I had him on my podcast a couple months ago. Really a great guy. I love his marketing components, his agency. Talk a little bit about the consulting that you do for people, Lynn, because you do have a consulting business. And, you know, the other thing, I'll toot your horn that you were chosen by Dentistry Today as one of the leaders in the consulting dental community. That's something to be proud of and hang your hat on. So talk a little bit about that, Lynn.
So as I mentioned, I love educating. Sometimes people need a little bit of personal touch and they reach out to me, and I have a wide range of what I can talk about. I'm really good with case acceptance. I'm really good with third-party financing. I actually have two workshops I've recorded and on-demand workshops that are available. I used to do it live during COVID. But I know how to make practices more money. And if a practice wants to do things a little bit differently, because I was very different in the way I did things in my practice, I didn't micromanage as much, but I took control of certain things that I wanted to do that I knew I was really good at, such as discussing the treatment and financing and payment methods with the patient. So I did the treatment coordinating and the financial coordinating as well, because I'm a really good salesperson. If somebody wants to learn those skills, that's really what I'm good at. But of course, people call me all the time for help with their bad reviews. I literally, before this podcast, I had a friend of mine got two bad reviews in a matter of about 5 days, and she really wanted to know what to do. So I'm an open book. I'm easy to reach out to, and anybody who wants to hit me up, and I'm happy to chat with them and figure out what's the best way to work with me.
Again, if you're interested in getting a hold of Lynn, great way to do it. Lynn is from LinkedIn profile. Are there any other social medias that they would be able to get some good information from you?
So I'm active on every social media. I'm on Facebook. It's Raving Patients, the group, or it's my name. Instagram, it's Dr. Len Tao. I'm on Twitter or X, Dr. Len Tao. As you mentioned, LinkedIn is a great way. But look, people can text me. I'm happy to give my phone number. The world has it anyway. It's available everywhere. So my phone number is 215-292-2100. And you can text me and ask any questions you have. And I truly pride myself on being so responsive, that because I literally get so many messages per day. If I don't answer right away, I don't have time. And I tell people, if I don't respond within an hour or two, there's three reasons why. One is I'm sleeping, so it's late. I'm giving a seminar, and I just don't have access to my phone, and because it's not available when I'm speaking. Or I'm on a plane with no Wi-Fi. That would be the only three reasons you don't get a response from me almost immediately.
It's not very often that someone gives out their phone number on a podcast or on the internet, Lynn. That's very valiant of you to do that. And I think that demonstrates your dedication to the dental community and the dentists themselves and growing their practice and having a practice that is meaningful for them and one of fulfillment. Obviously, I think they can experience through this podcast that you are a wealth of information. And sincerely, since, as I mentioned, that dedication to the field of dentistry, I think that's awesome that, you know, you came to a point in your career that you realized that what you could do best for dentistry was make dentistry better from the dentist perspective and the patient experience perspective. More of that needs to be done. You're consulting with a purpose. And the purpose is something that everything that's where you come from. And that's awesome. And I appreciate you spending time with us today and sharing this. I want the audience to understand and appreciate your message and let it be a challenge for the audience out there to get a hold of you, but also to hopefully we raised some questions in some people's minds that they know that they need to get it answered. The fee-for-service one and the fear for that, I would invite the audience to get a hold of you so you can explain and dive deeper with them on that. Lynn, is there anything else that you would like to leave the audience with at this point?
You're not really. Look, I think I said a lot here. I'm easy to get a hold of. I love talking about this. I have limited myself. I would say work 24/7, but I do limit myself somewhat because I'm not practicing dentistry anymore. But I will find time to speak with you. The thing is, you have to reach out and to one of the methods that I have, you have to find me. If you reach out, I will respond and be happy to set up a call or Zoom or something just to have a conversation with you regarding what you're looking to do. And if I can help you, I'm certainly able to. If I can't, I can. I'll tell you I can't. You know, I don't like doing things at this point in my career that I'm not, you know, really competent in doing. So I just don't take everybody on as a client. But if you need help and you want to learn and you want to learn from someone who was really successful in their practice for many years, that's what I'm here for.
I think that's a huge differentiating factor for you, Lynn. And again, that shows your commitment to dentistry and the fact that you're making yourself 100% accessible and you're guaranteeing the people that you will get back with them. And that is an uncommon thing where people put things out there, but they don't follow through with the promise. So kudos to you. I'm pleased that you were with us today and let's continue to make dentistry a better place for the dentist and for the patients. This is your host, Dr. John, and this has been the episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.